You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Rob Ferret. We're talking about the House Select Committee investigating the Capitol insurrection on January 6th. The group is aiming to begin public hearings next month, and a final report from the committee is anticipated in the fall. Just in time for midterm elections, right? We're going to talk about the latest from this committee, including controversial presidential phone logs from January 6th. And while we're on this subject of producing records, we'll discuss Assembly Speaker Robin Voss being held in contempt for not handing over some of his own. We want to hear from you, 800-642-1234. What do you think the outcome of all of this will be? What should it be? 800-642-1234. You can always post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Joining us is Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Susan, welcome back to Central Time. Susan, I'm not hearing you. Are you with us?
I am.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Well, we want to talk about this House Select Committee. Its work has been ongoing since last summer. Remind us of its goal.
The committee was established by the House of Representatives to investigate the events that took place on January 6th.
And what was it initially focused on, and have you seen that focus change?
Well, I would say that initially it was looking at the events of January 6th, looking for different people who were involved in the insurrection, looking to see the role that the president, former President Trump, may or may not have had. It was looking to see whether or not it would encourage criminal prosecutions through the Justice Department. And, the interesting thing is that as it's gotten going, it's uncovered more things that have then led it down different paths. So it's hard to say when a committee like this is established. It's not that the charge is so super specific that where it's necessarily going to lead. So, I mean, the umbrella there is January 6th and the different things that happened. And then as one door opens, another door opens.
Right, right. We've seen the Trump aides, senior staff, now family members, some cooperating before the committee, some refusing, being held in contempt. Are there anyone that has surprised you or stood out to you?
Well, I was interested to see that Jared Kushner, former President Trump's son-in-law, met with the committee virtually yesterday to speak to them about what he knows. And it was interesting. I read Benny Thompson, who is the chair of this House committee, talking about how there was helpful information that was shared and that they appreciated hearing from him and things like that. And I also have read that they are in discussions with Ivanka Trump, former President Trump's daughter. Who, mm-hmm. who also, may in fact meet with them. So I think that's been surprising as far as that goes. It was also interesting to me that former President Trump's former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, had originally engaged with the committee and shared some things, text messages and other things. That was the origin of the Ginny Thomas text messages. And so that he shared things and he was cooperating and then he stopped. So it's interesting that some people engaged with the committee and then kind of pulled back. So that's one other thing of note.
Right. And on that note, so he was held in contempt, right? But so far, what is the status of that?
The interesting thing about the contempt when it comes from Congress is that, and you're correct, he was voted, he was held in contempt in December, and there's been others since. Dan Scavino is one name that comes to mind recently. And the issue is that when someone is held in contempt of Congress, there's not necessarily a whole lot that Congress itself can do. And so it often is, it relies on the power of persuasion, let's say, to say, right. Well, look, you've been held in contempt of Congress, and we think that that should be sort of a stain on you, and we'd like you to reconsider participating. And but that obviously hasn't been the case. And I think that what some are hoping is that there would be a more aggressive role for the Justice Department that obviously has a lot more authority as far as its options in this regard.
Right, right. We're speaking with Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, about the January 6th Select Committee and its action. So meanwhile, there's this parallel criminal investigation going on at DOJ, and you mentioned that the actual House committee's work is, it feeds into that perhaps, but they, beyond the subpoenas, they cannot... is that where their power ends, the ability to request a subpoena and perhaps public shaming if they don't comply?
Right. And I mean, what they were trying to do is compel testimony and compel the surrender of documents.
Right.
And so that's what they're doing when they're – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, so I'm wondering, too, how significant is it that we have this 7-hour block of time during which there were no calls recorded on this official White House record?
I think it's very significant because there is a long history of presidential records being kept. And I know that's kind of a very simplistic way for me to say it, but everyone went to the missing minutes on the Nixon tapes because that's the most notable thing that we can think of. And so the idea that we have this day that was a very active day in the life of the president, and we have this 7-hour gap where there's no phone calls, when in fact we know that people spoke to him, because there are people, for example, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy in the House, who and others who have spoken about talking to President Trump on the phone during this period of time. And so it makes a person wonder, what phone was he using? Were the records just not kept, or was he using burner phones or someone else's phone? I mean, what was going on? I think it's quite significant.
And so what constitutes a presidential record as far as these phone calls go?
Well, logs are kept of everything. Logs are kept of the phone calls. Logs are kept of who enters the White House. Logs are kept of who enters the Oval Office. And all of that, when a president, those all have to be kept, and then they are turned over to the National Archives. And there are very clear rules about how that all goes. I mean, you might recall just not too long ago, there was a controversy about classified documents that were taken back to Mar-a-Lago and not turned in to the archives when President Trump left. And so the archivists at the National Archives take that very seriously. Again, what penalty is there? There's not, for all intents and purposes. But I think that the idea that we had this gap of time where we know that the president was speaking to people, but we have no record of that, suggests that there's a reason why we have no record of that.
Right. We're talking about the work of the House Select Committee investigating the events leading up to and including January 6th, 2021. Our guest is Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. Love to hear what you think. 800-642-1234. How does any of this impact how you may vote in the fall? 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation just a bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Molly Stentz, in for Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We're talking about the investigations into what and who was behind the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. We're talking about questions of presidential records and other governmental records and how this might all impact how we all vote and how future generations will look back at this period in our country's history. You can join us, 800-642-1234. Well, Susan, I want to follow up on that question of presidential records. Why are they so important?
I think they're important for a couple of reasons. I think they're important for historical purposes, just in the sense that it's important for historians and others to be able to go back and study what presidents have done. So I think that there's that. I also think that there's the transparency issue. And I think that's the more important reason, I would argue, that we're talking about someone who has been an elected, obviously elected to the highest office in the land. And the idea is that the actions that take place through the presidency, in the White House, needs to be very carefully documented in order to ensure that things that take place are appropriate, to use it in a very simple term.
Yes. Yes, and I want to go to the phones, Susan. We've got Mark on the line that wants to join us. Mark's calling from Kendall. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Well, when somebody doesn't follow the laws that make our country a democracy, aren't there any penalties or anything like that? Or, you know?
Yeah. What happens? What are the consequences?
Well, I think that's what we were getting to even earlier, with this idea that there's this parallel investigation going on through the Justice Department that a lot of Democrats, I would say, are frustrated is not moving as quickly as they would like. And that's where the potential criminal penalties could come into play on a number of different levels. I just think about the practicality that when you have something like a requirement to keep the records, or President Trump removing documents from the White House, these are the kinds of things that I think were written into policy, into law, with the expectation that they would not be violated. And so there isn't necessarily a lot of precedent for how you would punish someone for something like this, for not appropriately keeping phone records, for example.
Yeah. Well, and this brings up a case close to home here in Wisconsin with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. He's just been held in contempt of court for not turning over documents related to the Gableman investigation into the 2020 election here. And for his part, he says, you know, I deleted the emails. They don't exist. I can't turn up what I don't have. What do you think about that, the judge holding Speaker Voss in contempt?
Well, there are expectations for public officials that there's a maintenance of records, and that we turn those over to the public when they're requested. And so what we've seen is that in the case of the request of Speaker Voss in regard to the documents related to the 2020 election, what the judge has ruled is that there's been a disregard of the order, and therefore she held him in contempt of court and said that he had 14 days to turn over the records, and then there would be a fine of $1,000 per day, and that's the penalty that would be, that you know, Mark was asking about penalties. That's the penalty that would be in place for this kind of contempt order if those records are turned over. Now, the fact is that if they don't exist, then the records can't be turned over. However, if there's a public records request, you can, you know, run the analysis on the emails to see what's there and what's not there, and then it's the response. The judge can determine what's appropriate to share and what's not appropriate to share. So, but if the records aren't there, and he's saying the records aren't there, they're not there.
Right. And on those penalties, though, I mean, when you have a sitting elected official that is charged by a judge, who actually pays those penalties?
Well, given from what I've read, that would likely be added to the cost of the investigation itself, particularly given that it's not just Speaker Voss, and it's Speaker Voss in his role as Speaker and the Assembly, you know, and so that would be added to the bill.
For taxpayers, essentially.
Right.
So do you think, what do you, and I've noticed that this is, as you mentioned, this is not a common occurrence to find sitting officials held in contempt of court. Do you think we're in a new era of politics? I mean, do you think this is a trend, a start of a trend, or does this echo Nixon, and is this just history rhyming?
No, I think that it is indicative of the era that we are in, of hyper-partisanship and this country that is so divided in their own camps. And so you don't have the kind of comedy that maybe you had in the past. I mean, I think that what we're seeing with the January 6th investigation, I'm not terribly surprised that members of the former administration are not wanting to participate in a process that they believe is illegitimate. And so that doesn't necessarily surprise me. You know, in the state of Wisconsin, as far as this goes, there's such a strong history of public records and public records disclosure that if there's nothing to show, then nothing damning to show, then I'm a bit surprised that we're seeing such a resistance to share the documents.
Well, and with the January 6th committee, I wonder what you think the ultimate impact of this report will be when they finally reach that point. You know, when we finally get to the point where they've talk to everyone they can. They've got as much data as they can possibly gather from people that will talk to them. You know, then what?
I mean, I think it's going to be an important historical document because they're doing a very thorough job of looking at what happened. And I think a lot of it depends on how much more information they're able to gather while their committee is operating. There's a lot to be said for the idea that the Republicans are really trying to just run out the clock, because there's a hope that the Republicans will win in the November election, and then the committee will, if it isn't already done, will be shut down. And so I don't see that I have a lot of hope for big policy change or even for lots of disclosure more, and also of the criminal side of things, given how slow it's been to this point. But I think that, you know, we should do this just for the sake of doing it, because it's going to provide a lot of good information moving forward.
Yes. And we have a caller joining us now. We have Fawn in Madison on the line. Hello, Fawn.
Hi, Fawn, and hello, Molly. I have a comment, which is that this discussion really makes me more mindful that our elected representatives and officials are, in fact, public servants. And I think they need to be mindful that they are public servants. They're not just leaders. They serve the public. And in that capacity, they have obligations and duties that they need to be mindful of. So to me, that's an important point. And secondly, with regard to the disappearance of records, could it be viewed as theft and prosecuted in that manner? Thank you.
Thanks, Fawn.
To answer the second question, I don't believe it would be interpreted that way. But I agree wholeheartedly with the idea of elected officials are public servants and therefore answerable to the public.
Yeah. And on that note, do you think this will change public opinion? You mentioned we got the midterms coming up and that could change the equation entirely. Is this changing public opinion?
I think that for some people, the more that we learn, the more likely it is for them to say, you know what, this is really more than I can accept. It could be the Ginni Thomas text. It could be the 7 hours of phone records. It could be any number of things. But I think that it's kind of the drip, drip, drip. And so I think that potentially some people's opinions could be changed, but not everyone's.
So what are you watching for next?
I'm watching to see if any of these people who have been intransigent will decide that they're going to participate in the process. And I'm also watching very closely what the Justice Department is doing.
Yes. Yes. Well, that is the time that we have today. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
Thanks. We've been speaking with Susan Johnson, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We talked with her about some of the latest developments in the work of the House Committee investigating January 6th.